Continuing in our study of understanding the law, tonight we're going to talk about meditating upon the law. Psalm 119 and verse 9 says, "How can a young man cleanse his way? By taking heed according to your word." This is talking about keeping oneself free from the entanglements of sin. How can a young man cleanse his way? The enticements of the world and the potential for being entrapped in sin is great for the young as well as the old. But in this particular psalm, the psalmist is addressing the young. And part of that reason that I think for a young person, the potential of being entrapped in sin is far greater than for an older person is just because inexperience comes into the equation. There's a certain amount of inexperience. I'm not denying the fact that you've got 70-year-old people that are very inexperienced in spiritual truths and that, but this is just a general principle that age is a significant thing in the kingdom. The world is a dangerous and a destructive place in many ways, and there's much that can shipwreck you. And particularly when you're younger, you're not quite aware and able to discern or realize what those potential dangers are. So the psalmist asks, in the light of the dangers for young men, how can they hope to be kept from the pollution and the destruction of sin? And he answers his question by taking heed unto your law. He's saying, there are our answers. There is our protection. There is our safety. The psalmist repeats the same idea when he said to the Lord in Psalm 17 and verse 4, "By the word of your lips I have kept away from the paths of the destroyer." So by what God has said and by taking heed of what those words are, I've been able to steer clear from the path of the destroyer. When Jesus prayed for his disciples to be protected from the entanglements of this world, he said to the Father, "Sanctify them by your truth. Your word is truth. Set them apart. Separate them by your truth." And when we believe and do God's word, we are separated from the world. And that is our protection. And sets us apart. If you want to know a good psalms to turn to, Psalm 119 and Psalm 19. For exalting the law of God and encouraging us to meditate upon it, to know it and to do it. So never be at a loss of turning somebody to these if you're wondering where I can go to. It shows how it helps God's children and how valuable it is. So Psalm 19, verses 7 through 11, we read, "The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The statutes of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, yea, than much fine gold. Sweeter also than honey and the honeycomb. Moreover, by them your servant is warned, and in keeping them there is great reward." Psalm 19 verses 7 through 11. David is not merely stringing together a whole lot of poetic lines here, but speaking deep truth. That's when he says that knowing and doing the law of God is to be desired more than gold, even fine gold. He is touching one of the most intense desires of man's heart. He's going in there and saying, we all want to have enough to survive. We want to have in order to survive. And there's nothing immoral with that. We need these things. And he's saying, okay, gold represents that. It represents security, stability. It represents wealth, comfort, even fine gold, luxury in that sense. And he's saying, above these things, which are most dear to our heart, which is having wealth, to have the law is far greater than these things. He truly believed this because this is God's truth on the matter of true riches. The law protects us from harm. It warns us. And thus to know the law is to be wise. It's to be protected and it's to be rewarded. Psalm 119 verses 98 through 101 says, "You through your commandments make me wiser than my enemies, for they are ever with me. I have more understanding than all my teachers, for your testimonies are my meditation. I understand more than the ancients because I keep your precepts. I have restrained my feet from every evil way that I might keep your word." To be warned about danger is an incredibly valuable asset to have. I don't know if you've seen those advertisements, the new, I think it's the Mercedes-Benz, that it warns you if you're entering into danger, either going off the road or approaching another vehicle too fast from behind. It will warn you, I believe, and it looks to me like it could even start braking for you. Very valuable asset to have. But imagine having this for every aspect of your life. every decision you're going to make, every area you enter into, you've got this immediate warning that can guide you and sound the alarm when you're approaching something or about to do something that is dangerous or foolish. Any relationship you're getting into, the alarm bell goes off and says, hey, check this out. Any business venture you're about to undertake, all these kinds of different things in our lives, to have a warning like you get in those fancy cars. How much wouldn't that save us in all our resources, time and money, reputation, and on? David says that we have this in the law, and that is why it is more valuable than fine gold. And yet, for the most part, the way the church is instructed in our day is almost to despise that law. The greatest protection we have, outside Christ, we know we're protected by His Spirit, but the wisdom, the greatest source of wisdom and knowledge we have for being protected, for the most part, the modern church steers people away from that and says, no, we don't need that. We don't have to look at those things. We can pretty much make it on our own. In fact, it's practically worthless. Actually, it's more than worthless. It's regarded as harmful. So we don't want to even go there. We don't want our people to even dabble with that. It's a legalism. And then you've got some highly respected teachers that would even call it that. I have a book on my shelves by a very respected theologian who calls that understanding of the law legalism. David says, to do the law is to be protected from harm. The modern church says that if we do the law, we will be harmed. We have these two messages that are put forth to us. David said that the law will keep us from evil. However, the modern church says that doing the law is almost the worst form of evil and to be avoided at all costs. Let's stay away from that. Taking heed to the law makes us wiser than our enemies and keeps our feet from the slippery path. If you regard the law as something secondary or even harmful, then how much time will you spend meditating upon it? How much time will you let it run around in your mind and suck the richness from it and sap it all out? The psalmist says that he meditates upon the law day and night. And this is what makes him flourish like a green tree, like a tree planted by rivers of living water. In Psalm 1, that's what he says. I meditate on this day and night, and that's what I am. I'm stable, I'm immovable. It is my sure planting. To meditate is to turn something over and over in your mind. You examine it from different angles. You examine it in different contexts. You ask it different questions and you grapple with it over and over. It's meditating. And that's why, as well, I encourage you that having something blaring in your ears all the time is a distraction from being able to meditate. Always having something distracting you. People live, I know there's homes that the television is always on. It probably never even goes off. It's playing the whole time. Radios are playing the whole time. iPods and iPhones and everything. It reduces our ability to do this with the law, to meditate upon it, to scrutinize it from all kinds of angles in order to discover its full depth, its full significance for our life. But it's only by doing that, when the psalmist encourages us to do that, as David in other psalms talks about, you know, lying on his bed at midnight and meditating on the law. And we need to take those instructions to heart and realize, yeah, this is important to do, to turn it over and over in our minds. Even if you just take the Ten Commandments, the briefest statements of them, have no other gods, no graven image, don't take the Lord's name in vain, keep the Sabbath holy, honor your mother and father, do not kill, do not steal, do not commit adultery, do not, what's the ninth? Thou shalt not bear false in the tenth, thou shalt not covet. Covet your neighbor's house, your neighbor's servants, your neighbor's animals, your neighbor's wife, your neighbor's anything. Of the ten, three are directly tied to the family. It's interesting. Very specifically. Now they're all, in a sense, you could tie them back, but three are directly tied to the family. So honor your mother and father, do not commit adultery, do not covet your neighbor's anything. Do not covet his wife, because it's going into his family things, his servants, his possessions. So it's very tied. So of the ten, the three directly related to the family, meditate upon that. So why would God do that? You know, the Ten Commandments, as we've talked about before, are a distilled summary, a distilled statement of everything that God expects of us. There it is. Everything is reduced to those ten sentences. Every expectation, every responsibility, everything. And he reduces everything to ten statements, and three of them directly tied to the family. Now when you're meditating upon that, you say, well, why is that? And meditating and dwelling upon it, you start to see these aspects and the richness of it and say, okay, Lord, show me, help me see the significance and the importance of this. See the centrality and the significance that the family plays in the working of God's kingdom and outworking of His plans. What the family ought to look like. So if the family is significant, how should it look? How do I meditate on that? How do I work that out? What's the authority structure? What are the responsibilities of the respective family members? All of these things become important and vital to the preservation of society and the advancement of God's kingdom. Thus, anything that undermines, when you're meditating upon this and you start to grasp the significance of it, say, look, you know, this is key, this is central to the whole of what God's doing. And then we become more attuned and sensitive to anything that comes in and starts to undermine that. Anything that comes to pull the foundation out or threaten it in any way, we're alerted to it. We say, hey, this cannot be right. Because we've got Christians today that the family is being torn to shreds before their eyes and they're not even conscious of it. Many things are being torn to shreds and they're completely oblivious to what's happening. Any encroachment from any sphere, whether it's the state or whether it's the church, that comes into the family, when we're meditating upon it and dwelling and looking at its significance, we say, no, something's not ringing true here. This is not correct. Something is not playing out. And so we challenge that. Anything that weakens the family, that weakens the significance. Thus, as a man and provider of your families, those who already are and those who are going to be one day, the nature of your employment must not compromise your ability to fulfill your vital role in the family. So you're meditating upon that. So this is how it protects you, you see. I've kept me from those paths, as the psalmist was saying. I've kept me from the destructive way. You say, okay, how does this fit in to the significance of my responsibility with the family? This job is being offered me. Yeah, this is it. You're going to be flying around the world and 320 days of the year. But you're going to give you a tremendous two-week Christmas vacation with your family. And whatever island you want, we'll do this, you know. Your mind is saying, no, I'm sorry, I'm being protected now because I'm meditating upon the law of God. And so it protects us in that way. God's enemies are constantly and in many ways trying to destroy the family. But when you understand the significance God places upon it and know what He has revealed about its functioning, then you can be wiser than these enemies. You'll not be tempted by riches, by fame, or whatever other things might tempt you to neglect your responsibilities. But unless these laws are wrapped around your head, unless they're tied around your hand, the subtlety and the enticement will be greater than we can work through in our own wisdom. There are many subtleties that can get us out of focus and turn our attention to where it shouldn't be. And David insists that it is knowing and meditating upon the law that will protect us from these subtleties and give us the courage to stand against the less subtle encroachments of the state, which is aggressive and determined and forceful and threatening. Say, no, here we stand, because I know the parameters, I know the boundaries, and thus I'm not shifting. Because we see more and more the modern state believes it has the right to interfere in every aspect. Can touch your education, can touch the health, can touch your diet, can touch whatever it wants to. It's going to encroach in there and set the standard. And we need to know the law in order to stand against it. And it's vital to do that and have this deep inbuilt conviction in our hearts about the importance and significance of the law if we are going to stand. It really is not a light thing to stand when your comfort, your life, your whatever is threatened. And it is only because the law has taken deep roots within our heart that we can stand and say, sorry, I can't move away from this area. So as you meditate upon the centrality of the family in God's law, you also see that the family unit is integral to the dominion mandate given to mankind. And so you realize, okay, I'm given this task of dominion. But it's given to man in the context of the family, and therefore you've got to be thinking dynamically, how do I accomplish this in and through my family, the responsibilities I've been given? How? What does this look like? And so that requires great meditation and commitment to do that. So this should impact the way that parents equip themselves and their children. I need to be equipped for this task, for this responsibility. If we exist for this grand dominion task, then our focus and emphasis in what we do will be different from those whose supreme goal is self-serving, self-pleasure. It will be incredibly different. The decisions we make about our lives are greatly influenced by what we understand the purpose of life to be, and it is the law that sets these parameters for us. R.J. Rushdoony, he said, and I quote him, "The meaning of the family is thus not to be sought in procreation, but in God-centered authority and responsibility, in terms of man's calling to subdue the earth and to exercise dominion over it." So that's what the family exists for. That's our task and that's our goal. So how do we accomplish that? How do we go forward and implement that in our own unique and specific circumstances. As you meditate, as the younger folk, and I mean we all need to do it, but the younger folk more particularly, as you meditate upon the thing of honoring your father and your mother, the fifth commandment, you have to ask whether this command is only a test. Is this just testing my obedience? Is that all it's testing? Sometimes you think, okay, well, I've got to do just the obedience. That's honoring. Or is there something else that is to be learned? Is there some other channel that God is opening up to me that is vital for me when I do this, that there's other things that come into play? There's a real danger whereby children fail to fully inherit the blessing of their parents' wisdom. You can fail to inherit what they have, what your parents have learned in their life and attained. And children can fail to inherit that full blessing because of their lack of understanding of what it means to honor their parents. The command to honor your parents is the Lord showing children how wisdom is inherited. The flesh is naturally self-sufficient. And as you grow up, and particularly as you mature and become young men and older men, you need to realize that there's incredible confidence and belief in yourself. I really understand. I've really arrived. I've grasped. I feel very strong because you are. You know, as your strength increases and you feel very competent, and that you can tend to not appreciate the wisdom that is available and that God intends you to receive and inherit through your parents. To undervalue the wisdom of years is a serious mistake. That's what God is saying. I believe that's what honoring your parents, that's what He's doing, because it's connected to living long in the earth. Remember, that's the blessing. And part of that blessing flows through the wisdom that is imparted from generation to generation. And there's lots of things that are only gained and learned through time and experience. But these can be passed on in a nutshell and in a capsule form to the next generation to pick up and run with. And so that needs to be honored. I suppose the modern age that we live in, with this incredible explosion of digital stuff, for the most part leaves the older generation behind. You know, the Game Boys and all the gadgets that require electronic finesse leaves most of the older generation behind. And somehow it's possible for the younger generation, who's very savvy with these things, to interpret that as wisdom, and therefore the guy who doesn't know how to do these things, you say, well, he hasn't got much to teach me, has he? That's just a caution. I'm sure that none of you think that, but it's just putting that out as a caution. Because to honor, this is a channel for truly inheriting, and you need to see it as an inheritance. The wisdom and godly understanding that God imparts into the older generation is an inheritance, you know. Don't just be looking at your dad's bank balance and thinking, there's my inheritance. Okay, realize there's other things which, according to the psalmist, is far more worth than gold. That is a richer inheritance that God has set up for you. There's a conduit. You know what the conduit is from your parents to yourself? The conduit is honoring. It's honoring. And that becomes the conduit where you receive or inherit that instruction. Because if you do not honor your parents in your heart for the life they've imparted to you, for the sustaining, for the provision, for all that that goes into providing for you and instructing you, then you will not inherit the full wisdom. So God says wisdom comes with age. That's why we honor the gray-haired old man. That's why we show respect to the aged. It's because we believe God's word that, for the most part, a man who's following the Lord and he's now old in his years, he has gained wisdom, and there's something to be learned and gained from them. So an aspect of honoring is receiving instruction. Despite the temptation to feel, well, I just know everything, or I know most things, or I don't need instruction about that. So you can receive instruction, desire to be learned, not offended by instruction, because your flesh says you know it all. So I exhort you to meditate upon the significance of honoring your parents. The first 5 chapters of Proverbs are given to the same exhortation to honor one's parents by embracing their instruction. Embracing their instruction. And you can modify, you can reshape, you can do your families differently, but you need to realize, until you have a heart that can truly receive the wisdom and the things that have been learned already, you're not going to really be as effective as you can be. So if you don't self-consciously respect and honor your parents, then you will not learn much from them. So this is the vital channel or conduit that the Lord has established for you to attain wisdom. That is through honoring of your parents. As you meditate on that, honor my parents. What does that mean? What does honoring my parents mean in your mind? You meditate upon that. Meditate on for the next 3 weeks. The spare moment you have, you think, what does it mean? What does it look like? How does it look in this context? What should it look like in that context? Test it from different angles. Just dwell upon it and say, Lord, show me. Open it more and more to me. You do that with all the commandments, but just start somewhere. And trust the Lord to increase your understanding of it. So the way young people demonstrate their reverence for and humility to learn from God, because that's what we want to do. We all want to learn from God. Lord, I want to know your wisdom. I want to have it so that I can be effective for you. God says, well, do you know how you do that? This is the channel to get my wisdom. This is where you start. You honor your parents and you receive that channel, the conduit from them. And that is the stepping stone. You see, when we meditate, when you meditate on the sixth commandment, you're looking at it from different angles and turning it over and over in your mind. You shall not kill, shall not murder. Well, how does that deal with, relate to getting angry? What are the implications of that? Are the implications? Indeed. So we meditate upon that. It's sinful to get angry for no biblical reason. Being offended by someone is not grounds to become angry. Do you know that? Somebody offends you, you have no grounds to become angry at that point. That's not a basis. We can't take the law into our own hands. And this truth holds sure with the jurisdiction of the family, with the state and the church. We don't take the law into our own hands. As a sibling in your home, you cannot take the law into your own hands. In the church, you cannot take the law into your own hands. In the state, you cannot. You've got to go through the legitimate structures and channels in order to uphold God's truth. The sixth commandment calls us to use interposition, which is appealing system. So in the family, you've got an appeal system. Siblings in conflict, if they can't resolve it, there's an appeal system. Don't go look for the baseball bat. You go through the channels. But since there's an appeal system, those in authority have to be self-conscious and diligent in making sure that justice is measured out. Otherwise, the appeal system falls apart. There is no appeal system. And then, when there is no justice being measured out, whether it's in the family, whether it's in the state, people take the law into their own hands. They say, okay, well, we're going to get you back. Now you have to be subtle about that. If you're in the state and you're doing it, you've got to do it subtly. If you're in the family, children will learn how to do it subtly to get their own back on the sibling. So we've got there is a breakdown of law and order, a breakdown of justice. When you meditate upon that, thou shalt not kill. Okay, kill to anger, to justice, to recompense, the right recompense for what is accomplished. All these things, when you're meditating upon it, they start to come out in our minds and say, yeah, how do these all relate? What is my responsibility? And how does it work? So you suddenly see the richness of the law as you meditate upon it and how diverse and complex it is in many ways, but how relevant it is to everything we do. So as fathers and as prospective fathers, don't complain about injustice in the state if there's injustice in the family. And it's not being worked out on the family level of true justice. You meditate on the death penalty. How does thou shalt not murder relate to the death penalty? How does it relate to just war? How does it relate to self-defense? You can see the magnitude of what is entailed in what these commandments represent. The seventh commandment, you shall not commit adultery. It speaks of sexual purity in thought and deed. It's only God's law that can show us what is pure and what is immoral in the realm of sexuality. You see, desire is a totally unreliable guide. Desire cannot guide us. I desire. That's not enough to guide us and show us the path. It is only God's law. And as we meditate upon that, well, what is it? What is marriage? What is its purpose? How does it function? What is my responsibility to that? And bring every thought into subjection to God's revelation. Are there such things as heinous, terrible sexual sins? Yeah, there are. How do we know? What ought their punishment to be? For example, the New Testament only guy, he has no ability to call rape a really heinous sin. There's no New Testament counsel as to what a person who rapes should get. Nothing. So in that sense, we put aside the law of God and we go to the New Testament. It's got to be repeated in here, which many of our theologians today say. So, well, okay, well, to my mind, the New Testament doesn't seem to regard that as a heinous crime and sin. And so, therefore, maybe we shouldn't. Maybe we're being a bit harsh on it. See, once we put the law aside, we really have nothing. It's vital. It's a vital discipline that we meditate upon the law and through His enlightening come to true wisdom and realize that this is how we arrive at true wisdom, is by the words that God has revealed and saying, Lord, show it to me in the fullness and the scope of my life. I didn't want to go through all the commandments, I just touched on a few, but we can meditate on each one in that way. And you'll see as you're meditating upon the law and doing your own Bible reading, wherever it happens to be in the Bible, as you're working your way through, whether it's your personal or whether it's family devotions, you will see the significance and the connection of how that law that you're meditating upon is unpacked and becomes real. So I hope you can see the practicalities and the importance of understanding the law and then applying it. Are there any comments or questions or clarifications needed?